That was True Grit from Wilma Laverne Minor. This is Everly with That's a Kilo High here on CITR 101.9. Up next is a new Peter Matthew Bauer, which I have been waiting for new music from him. So this one's called East off the album Flowers.
Hey, why are you so sad today?
My succulent died.
Can you even kill those things?
It's okay, there's a Dead Succulent Haunt episode every Thursday at 5 p.m. here on CITR to help your plants grow and to help you mourn those you've lost.
Come on, let's go start some cuttings and listen to Dead Succulent Haunt with Everly on CITR 101.9.
Outside is melting on the glass.
You just heard Another Dimension from Myrna. Up next is Waiting for You, Companion. This is Everly with Dead Succulent Haunt here on CITR 101.9.
This time. I've got my heart in my head. I've got the impending dread. I've got the magical thread. I lost the keys to the van. I lost my man to my man. I lost it begging the sand. I bought the grocery store.
Hi everyone, I'm Nicole and you're listening to All Access Pass, a show brought to you by the Accessibility Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. We are broadcasting live from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land of the Musqueam people.
I'm Bailey. I'm with the Sports Collective here. Technically, I'm the Sports Collective lead this year, which I didn't initially intend to be the Sports Collective lead because I'm actually a music student. But my whole family plays sports. I've played sports my whole life, and I realized that there's a lot of similarities in the performance practice of both athletes and musicians. So that was something I was talking about at the station, and then I was like, I might as well. There was no Sports Collective lead this year, so I was like, I might as well join the Sports Collective and ask people about what kind of music they listen to and try my best to discuss the parallels in the performance practice between musicians and athletes, since it's sort of similar. So that's sort of my goal this year. But the Sports Collective, we're the voice of the UBC T-Birds. So we try and cover sports games, interview athletes, just cover general sports happenings around UBC. But yeah, that's the Sports Collective. The only thing we've covered this year, we did this cheer team at the football game versus the University of Manitoba Bisons, which was cool. We ran around and asked everyone what song they listened to, and we just recorded some of their routine. We met Crazy P. I don't know if you guys know who Crazy P is, but he is crazy. He's like the hype man of the football games, I guess. But yeah, so that's the Sports Collective. That's me and sort of like our goal this year. So
I'm Nicole. Perfectly normal transition. I'm the Accessibility Collective lead. So the Accessibility Collective surrounds topics with accessibility, neurodivergence, disability, special abilities, and mental health / illness. Yeah, I've been running the show for a few months now. It's been a lot of work, but incredibly rewarding. And I'm super excited for this to be our first collab. Ebba, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so my name is Ebba. I am 22 years old. I'm from Sweden, actually. I am an elite para rower. I row for the Swedish national team. And I'm also a third-year kinesiology student at UBC.
Are you doing your undergrad in kinesiology?
Yes, I am. But right now I'm studying from Sweden to be able to train a bit more with the national team for a very important qualification season next year. So I'm right now currently studying online from Sweden.
Cool. And we also have another special guest today, Sam. She is in my collective, my accessibility collective. Sam, would you like to introduce yourself really briefly and tell us about yourself?
Yeah, thanks, Nicole. So my name is Sam. I use she, her pronouns. I am a new member of the Accessibility Collective. I didn't know that CITR really existed until a couple weeks ago, so that's been a very exciting couple weeks. I just finished my BSc in Kinesiology at the University of Alberta, and I am almost a semester into my first year of a master's in kinesiology, specializing in adaptive physical activity, sociocultural studies, and critical disability studies. My research, at least the proposed research project right now, is more specific to intellectual disability, but it is around, you know, kind of para-athletes and Paralympic pathway athletes. So I'm super excited to meet another kin student and to kind of get to know you, Eva.
So I thought I would just start it off with just some, like, chill questions, just sort of, like, ease into the interview. I don't know, Ebba, if you've had, like, a season yet, or I don't know really how rowing works, like, if you have a season, competitions, but have you started with the season yet or something like that?
No, rowing is very much a summer sport, so the season is pretty much over for this year. Okay. So we start in late March, early April again, I would say.
Okay, so you're off season.
Yeah.
The funny thing about rowing is that we technically do have like an on season, but training never really stops.
Yeah.
No, it's like we just have different seasons of training, and then it just depends on if you have competitions or not. Okay. It's pretty much just like different training seasons.
So what do you do right now for training?
Right now it's a lot of, we still can row a bit since I live in a city with a river, so it never really freezes. So we can row pretty much all year round, but we do a lot of, I do a lot of ski erg, I do a lot of hand cycling, I do a lot of weights, and also a lot of erg.
A lot of what?
Erg, like the rowing machine.
Oh, okay, cool, nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've tried a rowing machine before. It is very hard.
Yeah.
But
good training.
yeah. Okay, cool. So you're training off season now. And how did the season go last summer then?
I didn't compete that much this year. We had a transition with the national team. We have a new head coach that's been coaching South Africa. He's from Italy. His name is Marco. So we had a kind of transition year pretty much. But it's exciting, and I'm excited where we can go with him with new opportunities and Swift in the Federation. It's exciting.
Cool. Okay, yeah. I hope it goes well with the new coach.
Yeah.
I used to have a track coach named Marco, too. But,
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Really, I thought you did rugby. Did you also
I did. I also did track.
Look at this multi-talented athlete right here.
My dad was a track coach, so I had to.
Oh.
I don't know if I really enjoyed it.
Oh. No, I was the same way. My dad was also a track and field coach, and so I did track and field.
Yeah,
it's not a choice, you know, you just have to.
Yeah, my dad's always like, let's go for a run, and I'm like literally dying. Yeah, and I don't know if you have, like, I thought you could talk to us a little bit about your setup. It can be fun. Like, what's your go-to sports drink? What's your go-to sportswear? What's your go-to song? Like, if you have like a song that you listen to warm up, a song you listen to like get hype before like a competition. Just take us through your setup, if you have any like notable recommendations, stuff like that.
In terms of songs or music?
Yeah, music.
I don't know. I'm very much like, music is very important for me. It's like my best friend. I always have like music, like pretty much, I think Spotify is my most used app of all of them. So I would say it very depends on my mood for the day. Like what I want to do, if I want to get hyped up, if I just need like some company, what I want to do. But for training, I have like different playlists that I use. I have a specific playlist that I'm only allowed to play when I have a race or an erg test coming up. So I'm not like allowed to put it on otherwise, because that's like my ritual kind of thing. to do before. And then I know, like, this is, now it's serious. Now I have to, like, my body is like a physical response that it's like, if I hear these songs, then I'm like ready to go. But I don't know if I have like a specific song though. That's okay, hard. That's
cool. Yeah, no, I also have playlists. And I listen to them at specific times too. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, I feel like it's good to save. Like, if I save the one playlist, for example, it's probably different for me. So I'm about to go perform on stage, but I always listen to the program I'm about to perform. I always save it for, like, right before. I'll listen to it in full if I'm backstage. And then, yeah, it just helps get into the zone. Like,
yeah, it really does. It really does. Out. Music can really do that. Yeah. With both, like, emotions and mindset and everything.
Yeah. Oh, it I'm can glad be powerful. You said, though, that you do listen to music, because I feel like some people don't, or at least it's not as important. But I guess it just depends for the person. But yeah, I think it's really helpful.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's really the first thing I do. Like, on the race day, I put my headphones in and I'm going into that little bubble until I'm going to the dock and to launch. So
nice.
Yeah.
I think my dad always said that. Because he did long distance, so he'd always listen to a song that had beats per minute that matched the pace that he would run at. And I always thought that was really interesting. And so I would always try and do that when I went running. I would try and listen to a song and match the speed.
That's super smart, actually.
There are specific playlists in Spotify with specific BPMs.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Do you ever name the playlists?
I don't know. Like, what I've said on Spotify is, like, running BPM, like, 154 or something. Like, they're very specific.
That's so cool.
176 is me, like, sprinting down the street.
My favorite song to listen to, whether it be for performance or training or whatever, because I pretty recently made the switch into, like, cycling, like road cycling, and my song is Like a G6. I think it's
oh yeah you're saying song.
Yeah, it's a good
yes.
one.
Yes, I guess for me right now, I'm only listening to music really, like, I'll listen to my recital program, or I'll listen to music when I study. So I listen to Bach because it helps me, like lute music, like continuous, like, guitar lute for like 5 hours. But it helps me, like,
oh wow,
stay focused, I feel like, because it just is like continuous.
Another good one is elevator music when you're studying. Yes. Yeah, to, like, get in the vibe, get calm, elevator music, or it's like hell. I either way, it's really funny. Sometimes I just play that in the car radio.
Wait, Sam, do you have a song? Off the top of your head? I mean, you can always say it later, but if you have one now.
I used to. There's one race, and it was a team event, and, like, I was I started off behind, and, like, it's just me. It's me in the swim, me in a bike, me in a run, and so I, like.
And you did triathlon?
I did.
Oh my
gosh. I definitely did. Yup. And now I don't. The transition kind of going from high school athlete to university rec athlete was a little bumpy. So now I just kind of bike for fun. I wanted to ask Eva, though. So, like, how was the transition for you? I'm assuming you did sports in high school, or do you just, you know, jumped right onto the national team? Or what was that transition like?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been rowing since I was 8 years old. And back to your dad, my dad was a rower. So I think he comes from there, obviously. And I wouldn't really say that sports is a thing in Sweden in schools that it is in maybe US and Canada. We don't really have those high school teams or university teams in terms of that. So I think it's more like on the side, apart from school, that you do sports. So yeah, I've been rowing since I was 8 and pretty much was stuck since then.
And how did you find that transition? Because Correct me if I'm wrong, but you went to high school in Sweden, I'm assuming?
Yeah.
And then you moved countries, you moved continents, and, you know, started sport at a competitive level or a more competitive level? Or tell me, like, what was that like?
So I was at the junior national team since I was 14, 15, something like that, in Sweden. So I was in the national, I pretty much been on the national team since then, and did a transition to the senior team instead.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so it's the transition to the senior team, not like the transition, not the step up into the national team.
Yeah, I don't know how you guys do it in Sweden, but here, the way the rowing national team works is there are like streams to get to the senior national team. And usually a lot of people are recruited at a pretty young age. Like they're recruited in high school for the junior national team, kind of like what Ebba said for Sweden. And then they streamline eventually to the senior team if they end up training hard enough to be fast enough for that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But there are some people that start here, at least in university, and then kind of they work very hard and make it to the nap. Ebba, have you been a para athlete since high school?
When I became a para athlete?
Yeah.
I got my injury when I was 17. So it was actually I'm not sure what it becomes, but it's between, we have like first, second, third in high school. So in the summer between first and second year in high school, did I get my injury. So yeah, when I was 17.
Do you want to talk about what that process was kind of like, the transition from being in the able-bodied stream to the para stream, or should we skip the question and keep moving? Your choice.
No, of course. So yeah, I came into the junior national team when I was 14 or 15, I can't really remember. And I competed at like different international competitions with the junior national team, and felt really good, of course. And I was super excited where it could go. And in the summer 2017, I got my injury. And I remember I was lying at the hospital. I didn't really know, like, is this the end of my rowing? Like, will I be able to keep going? I was pretty much, my head was like, no, I need to find something else to do. I need to figure out what I can do now instead, because like my whole life was pretty much training and rowing and competing and all of that. It was such a big part. Like all my friends was at the club, all my friends and family had the rowing in it. So I didn't want to lose that part as well in the process of everything, which was kind of like hard for me to like, oh, my life changed like upside down, and now to lose the rowing as well. I really, really didn't want that. But I remember I was trying to look at like, oh, what other sports can I do? Am I like going to start baking now? Or what am I going to do like on my spare time? Because I will have so much time because I won't be able to train. But I remember I did a Google search at the hospital, like para rowing. And I got up this, the world champion in my category is from Norway. Her name is Birgit Skarstein. She's currently the world record holder. And I was like, wow, she's doing good. She's cool. It seems like it's working. So I was like, yeah, maybe this is something I actually could keep going and could do.
I'm just gonna, what a classic student athlete move, in the hospital, injured, Google's like, can I still do my sport? Like,
yeah,
dedication. Sport
that's
is life.
What you're thinking about.
Totally kidding, but no, yeah. But oh man.
Yeah.
So what was the, I assume there's some sort of period of recovery or healing, or maybe you jumped right out of the hospital bed and right back onto the boat. You know, what was that kind of like?
Yeah, it was a process, but I really just, I'm very much the person that hates hospitals. I hate everything about it. I felt so uncomfortable there, and I really, really just wanted to get out of there. And I think in that situation, I saw the share as the only way, like concrete way to actually get out of there. So I was like, what the heck? Give me that share. Teach me how to use it so I can get out of here. Because I really felt so uncomfortable in all that situation. So I was at a few weeks. I moved to the capital of Sweden in Stockholm. I did a few weeks of rehab there until I was back in school. Pretty much like 6 or 8 weeks later after my injury, wow. I'm back in high school. But that was, of course, the process of coming home and everything as well. Things are not as, you don't think about like, oh, there's a step in the house or there's a thing there that I can't get up. So there was a process of like everything at home and in school and everything as well, coming back to all friends and everyone there as well. Mm-hmm. But I got back to the club. I tried to learn like what I can do at the gym and everything. And the whole club was very supportive of me coming back and wanted to find solutions for me as well. That's actually also where I worked at a CrossFit box here in my city, in my hometown, as a rowing coach. And they actually was so, like, they really, really wanted me to be able to train. So we actually came to develop an adaptive erg seat that you put into the erg front wheel. So we've actually developed that with Concept now, and it's on Concept Sweden's website for people to buy. And just to see that whole process of me coming home, not being able to use the machines as I used to, and then being able to like have that like as a product afterwards, it was pretty cool process. I came back home, started to train again, and then I got invited to, I was in Czech Republic actually with the national team, try to sit in a power boat for the first time. And that was, I think, 6 months later after my injury or something like that. So I tried that. I wasn't really sure because I was there at, with the national team, of course, and I was so slow. It was not what it used to be. And they just looped me on the course, and I was like, is this really what I want to do? But a month later after that, I got invited to a development camp with FISA, which is the like World Federation of Rowing, in Italy, in Gavrate, where I tried for the second time. And I also ended that week with a competition. And I don't know, it was something about like going over the finish line in that race that I just felt that all the endorphins, all the feeling of racing in the boat and everything about it was still exactly the same, even if so much had changed during that time. And that was when I knew that like, rowing is still rowing, and this is what I want to do. So that was a pretty cool feeling to feel.
Yeah, it sounds like, you know, as you're going through this massive transition, being injured, moving to the capital for some like rehab stuff, moving back home, realizing there's all these little things that have changed, but like rowing, seems like rowing was the thing that remained constant that it sounds like you find a lot of joy in. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, absolutely. And also, I think the feeling of like security and home and safe and everything around it that you also had. For me, rowing is so much more than just rowing in the boat. It's like, it's the club, it's the friends, it's the everything around it as well. That I think was the one thing that helped me go through my injury as good as I have been.
Yeah, I think sometimes people who weren't like involved in competitive sport kind of through high school, like sport is your, I won't say your family, but it's your community. You know, your teammates are your friends. They're, well, depending on the team, they may or may not be your exes. You know, they're people you've trained with, you've known for years, and it can be really supportive. I know Nicole, because you are also a rower, you know, how did you kind of find that team environment on your team?
In high school, really, really loved it. Had some truly amazing coaches that I still turn to for life advice now. Loved my team. Obviously, we had our ups and downs. It's high school. We're dramatic teenagers. But I think rowing is a very special community in the sense that all sports have their own special communities. But rowing is just such, and Ebba, you relate to this. It's just such a miserable sport. Like you wake up at 4 a.m. and you go row at 5 a.m. in the dark and it's pouring rain and you're sitting there and you're like, I hate my life. I don't want to be here. And it's just like 4 months of pure suffering to go race for like 8 minutes, which is also pure suffering. And then you finish and it's like the best feeling in the world. And you're like, I'm willing to do that 4 months all over again for that one moment, which may be applicable to a lot of endurance sports.
I was going to say, you're talking to a triathlete. The early mornings, the practices, the, oh my God, why do I do this? But like collective suffering brings people together.
Oh my gosh. I have this one memory. I was racing in high school. I'm from Vancouver and I raced down in Washington, and this was when I was in the 10th grade, and they should have canceled the race because it was too cold. Like it was, they have rules in rowing and it was like -5 or something and like snowing and raining. And they were like, oh, we want to see the universities hash it out. We're going to keep the race going. So we do the race and my boat is on the water for 3 hours, which includes like wait time, actual racing, and then rowing back to the dock. And it was 8 girls in my boat plus me, so 9. And we get back to the dock and my coach is smiling and he's so excited because he's like, my girl's first international race. And we're all crying. We're all sobbing hysterically. Well, actually 3 girls were not sobbing, me and 2 other girls, me because I was a coxie. So I sit there and yell, that's my job. And I kind of have to stay calm, but I remember our coach kind of helping us out of the boat, parents freaking out, and they're like, okay, Nicole, get out of the boat. And I was like, I can't move. I was so cold that I had actually gotten hypothermia. And I went to see some paramedics and they were like, you should really get her to a hospital. And my mom was like, we're Canadian. We'll just bring her across the border and figure it out there. Luckily, I ended up being fine. But I just look back at that moment from like 5 years ago with some of my teammates now who have gone on to do bigger, better things. All across Northern America, across North America. And we all look back on that moment and it was miserable. It was just all of us crying in these hot showers together, stripped down to like our unis in November. And we all look back on that and we laugh and we were like, that is the moment where we truly became a crew and not just 9 girls in a boat. What a little heartwarming story. But
it's so cute. I love it. Yeah.
It was, oh my God. It was like, you really never feel cold after experiencing that. But that was my high school experience. And this is maybe a topic for another day, but I did not have the best competitive university rowing experience. And I think a lot of that has to do with culture and how it's shifted and what's at stake at that point, because there is a lot more at stake. But I think rowing is a special environment that affords you a whole bunch of different perspectives with a whole lot of suffering to come with it. Ebba, you were briefly, you still are, I guess, but now you're training with Sweden, part of the UBC rowing team. How did that kind of come to fruition? Because I did have the privilege of seeing you race one time. And then I never saw you race ever again.
No, I know. But that was also the one time I did race and compete for UBC, like so far at least. I'm in my 3rd year. So of course I did my 1st year during COVID, which also was online for me from Sweden, which was terrible because then I had classes during the night. This time I've more chosen my classes and what times they are, so I have a much better schedule. But then of course I came for my 2nd year to UBC and I wanted to be a part of the team. I had been trained with a Canadian coach called Jill Roflinger, amazing coach, and I look up to her so much in everything she do. But we also try to then include me in the UBC rowing team, of course. And it was a process. I think, I don't know for whole UBC how it is, but I think the para aspect of the like athlete part is not very developed. Correct me if I'm wrong.
You were the first para athlete UBC rowing has ever had, to my knowledge.
Yeah, and I'm not sure, like, only rowing. I haven't really seen too much in any other sports.
I feel like I haven't either. Seen a whole lot of university sports with para programs.
Oh, yeah. So I was very happy that Craig wanted to include me and offer me the opportunity to also race at, like, in Victoria at the Canadian National Championships that time, which was a wonderful experience, and to be included in the team and be just with everyone and be a part of it. That's like, as we talked about, it's also like the community of it, the friends, the social part, everything around it, which makes it so much more fun. So I was so grateful to be able to do that. What is it now, 1 year ago? But then, yeah, I haven't had that big part of the team. Of course, now when I'm in Sweden, but I think it's also like a balance. It's hard to find. In adaptive sports, you need to be very open to like another ways, like alternative ways of doing things. You need to think, have a mindset that is like, okay, so we want to do this. We can't do like this, but we need to find another way. We need to find another solution. And I think as a coach, you need to be very open to that and have that mindset in it and not just be stuck in the way that they always do, which is very easy with coaches that've been in the same positions for years. And I don't say that, I'm not sure how that is in all community teams, but I think that's just a mindset that is needed for para to be included more than it is.
Yeah, I know. If Dr. Pierce, if you're listening, please, I'm still working on it. A couple years back, I did a research project looking at coach development in paratriathlon, and the reference being, I still am very, very slowly working on the paper, so if you are my supervisor, I'm sorry, it's like several months late. But one of the things that the coaches talked about is like, the creativity, the coming up with new solutions, the running into something, oh, I never realized that was a barrier. What do we do now? And like, I remember a lot of success stories seem to come when the athlete and the coach and any other kind of people involved in the team would work together and collaborate to figure something out. Did you have any kind of that positive collaboration, or was it, or did you find some barriers to access when you're on the UBC team, when you were training with the UBC team?
Yeah, so I haven't been training that much with the team. I've been using the ERG room a few times. That's pretty much what I have been doing with them, and of course racing that time in Victoria. I think maybe it was a bit hard to find those like openness to be creative and what we can do in order to include everyone, which I also kind of like, I like, it's okay, and I'm okay with that, and if they're not open to it, then fine. I'm also very much the one that don't want to like come in and just raid and like crash something. I want also like, I want it to be genuine and mutual, and like, if they don't want me there, then I don't want to be there, because like, I want to be a part of someone who actually wants me there and can participate with something, which I hope I can also. I hope I can like give up ones at the team more than they just also have to give me, and or like, I don't want them to feel like they just need to help me. I want them like to feel that I'm an athlete as a team as well. And that's a hard balance to find, I think. So I trained a lot with my coach, Jill, during that time, and did a lot of training on my own, which also gets kind of like monotonous and alone, of course, because you want to
on your own training spirit. Sucks.
Yeah.
Because when you're by yourself, it's not collective suffering, you're just suffering. Like,
yeah,
it's not fun
you
anymore.
Also don't, no, and you don't push yourself as hard as you could have done or you need to do, especially in rowing. You need to push yourself to limits that you really don't want to be at. And that's hard to do alone.
Absolutely, yeah.
So funny. I hate training in group settings. I prefer to bike alone. I don't like group rides. I like Zwifting alone. Sam, we should ride sometime.
The Zwifting alone, that was my COVID plan. It was going to be me and my bike. And then I was like, this sucks. And then I didn't.
Oh my gosh. I used to, when school was fully online, I used to spin throughout all of my classes because that was just the only way I could focus through my lectures. And it was to the point where I was spinning for like 4 to 5 hours a day.
That's so good for your training, though.
I've like or felt that was like probably the best physically I've ever felt. Mentally, I was in hell. But I don't know. Training by yourself is truly the kind of thing, though, where it needs to be you have to have some really specific set goals in your mind, or else you just feel like you're rowing or pedaling or swimming or running into the abyss with no clear path. And I feel like it's easy to spiral. Ebba, did you ever, especially during COVID, feel like you were training for nothing and you just felt really frustrated?
Oh, yes. Absolutely so much. But I also think the training, like without the training, it would have been so much worse. Like both mentally and physically, you would have been in such worse state. So I did the same as Unical. Like I was going through classes on my ski erg, doing that at the same time. And it's also like a kind of way to just escape sometimes. I think all athletes can feel that we just, sometimes we need to escape reality and just get that energy out of your system somehow.
I'm wondering, you know, so I think training alone can be, it can be grueling, but it can also be really rewarding, or maybe something that kind of like keeps you kind of feeling sane in the middle of a global pandemic. But I wonder, does training alone feel different when there could be an option of training with a group, but for various reasons, you're unable to? So does training alone feel different when it's not because like there's a global pandemic and I'm not allowed to leave the house? It's because I'm kind of being excluded or not included or not integrated into, you know, an existing team? Or does it feel the same? I don't know.
No, of course. I think the reason behind it can like affect so much. Being excluded and not being able to, like not even having the option of doing it, it's of course way, way worse. But like just for the training part wise, I would say that it differs so much what type of training you're doing. If I'm doing a 3-hour session just distance, like I'm happy to be on my own.
Put in music,
put on a good podcast,
yeah.
And I'm just like in my zone. But yeah, if you're doing intervals or a harder really session, then of course you want to be in a group. You want to have the team spirit. You want someone to push you to the next level that you can go.
I didn't get that.
Yeah.
Could you try?
So yeah, I think that's my what I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so interval sessions. What do you have a playlist or like a go-to song? What's the vibe for like hard intervals? Is for music, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, there's so many. I just put Shuffle on my playlist, but Stronger by Kanye West is a good one, I think. Always gets you hyped up.
Yeah, music. I just think this conversation is like really interesting that you guys are having in regards to like the difference between training alone versus training with a group. Like, I'm just listening to this conversation and I'm like, this is an interesting parallel, I guess, to music as well. Like, I can't really relate on the training side in terms of training as an athlete, but training as a musician, there's always the option to train like with a group of people in a quartet or in a large ensemble versus training as a soloist. And I find that training as a soloist can be hard in so many different ways because I kind of get lost in my own mind and I don't know like where to limit myself. Like I could practice for like 8 hours and not even realize, and like my lip will be bleeding and I could just like keep going because I kind of get into the flow and get into the zone. And so it's just an interesting parallel there where it's like, but I don't know if you guys prefer to train alone or with a group, because also there's the team dynamic, which sort of also helps. Like if I'm training with a team, we don't necessarily go as long as I would go training solo, but it's maybe like the team element maybe helps get more done because there's a bunch, everyone has ideas. But I prefer to train alone just because I can listen to that music. And
yeah, I was about to say, I prefer the greatest part about training alone is that you can pick the music and you don't feel self-conscious about other people listening to your music.
Yeah,
that's legit.
So many times people have been like, Nicole, do you want to aux? And I'm like, absolutely not.
I'm curious, though, for you guys, like if you're training with a group, what's it like to sort of, because I don't know how rowing works, like how many people are in the boat if you're training?
1, 2, 4/5, 8/9.
Okay.
Basically, I like really did not explain that well.
It depends.
Yeah, like there are different boat classes. There's singles, which is one person.
So you can do a single.
Sorry?
So you can have like one person.
Yeah, you can have one person. Okay. And then you can have two people in a double or a pair, or four in a four or a quad. And sometimes there's a coxie in that boat, which is what I did. And then an eight, which does require a coxie.
Okay. So yeah, I guess in music, it's like you could have a soloist or you could have a quartet, which is four people. Or you could have a lot more people. But I'm curious about the group dynamic, because sometimes I have a hard time working in a quartet because everyone's ideas tend to be different and it's hard to come to terms, or it's hard to come to one way of doing things because everyone might have like a slightly different idea of how to do it, and it's hard to reconcile all of those ideas because they're creative and they're all valid, but sometimes it's hard to reconcile that, and usually it's the soprano player who has the final say. And so if I'm not the soprano player, I can get really frustrated because I always want to have the final say. Like, I want to play it this way. And then if we don't end up playing it that way, it gets really frustrating. But I don't know if it's similar for you guys.
Never related to that struggle. Always have been a soprano singer / violinist. Always been the star. Life's good. I feel like this might differ in terms of music and sport, but I feel like with rowing specifically, yes, sometimes ideas might clash, but usually everyone is so focused on reaching the same goal that people are willing to hear other people out.
Okay.
So the team dynamic, honestly, at least I've never had any experiences where people have like really hated rowing with someone else in big boats. In small boats, that's a different story, but I don't row small boats, so not my problem. But big boats, like everyone has the same goal and it's to go fast. So everyone is willing to like try, at least try whatever anyone else is suggesting.
You've been listening to CITR 101.9 FM's Accessibility Collective. We'll be right back after this short break.
In the context of Vancouver's opioid crisis, CITR would like to take a moment to share some harm reduction strategies.
Try not to do drugs alone. When going out, let friends know what drugs you're taking and make sure someone has an naloxone kit. If you're able to, get your drugs tested before taking them.
Avoid mixing opioids with alcohol or stimulants. Remember that opioids can include painkillers prescribed by a doctor, and it's possible for any drugs to be contaminated with opioids.
learn the signs of opioid overdose, which include, but are not limited to, unresponsiveness or unconsciousness, inability to speak, breathing that is slow, erratic, or has stopped completely, heartbeat that is slow, erratic, or has stopped completely, skin tone that has turned blue or gray, choking or gurgling sounds.
If you think someone is overdosing, call 911 immediately. Start rescue breathing and administer naloxone if you have it. You cannot get in trouble for being on drugs, so always call 911 in an emergency.
For more information about naloxone kits and training, visit towardtheheart.com.
Thank you and stay safe.
Okay, let's see here. Blend equal parts science and stories. Add a few shakes of music and soundscape, and wrap it all up in a big question. How can we see this more than human world in a new light and take part in shaping a healthy Anthropocene? Catch Future Ecologies every Sunday at 8 a.m. on CITR.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Nicole, and you're listening to All Access Pass, brought to you by CITR 101.9 FM.
What instrument do you play? Sorry, I missed.
Oh,
what?
I play the saxophone. So
okay.
It's kind of like it's kind of like a string instrument in terms of classical saxophone. You can have like solo repertoire and then quartet repertoire. But yeah, I don't know if you guys ever clash with your group creatively, but sometimes it's hard to find a group, a good group, where you can just like, I feel like it's very rare to find a good quartet that can perform well in competitions. Like, it really has to be people who you can get along with in the music room and outside of the music room.
Yeah.
At least for music. So yeah,
I know. In music spaces, mind you, I've always kind of sung in choir, so like it you know, wasn't cooperation between four or five, there's like 40 people, so if you don't like one person, go find someone else to talk to, you know? But in sport, oftentimes, particularly with sports that like maybe aren't so mainstream, so like not soccer or basketball, there's, at least, okay, I can only speak for myself. Like, a triathlon isn't a big sport. And so there's like 10 people in the province and they are your teammates and your only competitors. So, you don't get to choose your teammates, or at least I never got to, and so you just kind of have to figure out how to coexist. And some people, best friends, work great, and some people it's like, I'm just gonna like pretend you don't exist, and you're gonna pretend I don't exist, and this is probably good for, this is the best way forward. I don't know. Eva, what was your, did you ever row like in one of those big boats, or were you always singles, or... do you row doubles now, or what?
So right now, I only row the single. I've been rowing the adaptive inclusion doubles a few times. I raced that at the Head of the Charles in Boston in 2019. But right now, I mostly row the single because that's my class and what I compete in. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. For anyone who doesn't know, the Charles is like one of the most famous rowing competitions in history / the world, and it's known for having a famously tricky course. How do you steer that?
I don't know. It was also just so fun because it's a longer race. We usually row 2,000, of course, but I think this is like, what is it, five maybe? It's up to five, something like that. So it's kind of tricky. It has a lot of bridges, a lot of turns. But I pretty much left that to like the bow seat and just went because I was stroking. But yeah, it also keeps your mind on something. And there's so many boats. It's also not the typical race where everyone starts at the same time. Instead of you're going away in like, I think it's 30-second or 60-second intervals. So the other boats can like catch up to you and like row past you or something like that. So there's so many aspects to like look out for in the race, which also makes it just so much more fun. And I think there's hundreds of thousands of spectators coming, watching, and they're standing like crowds all over the bridges and everything. So it's really just like a something you have to do in life if you're a rower. It's like, I think they call it like Rower's Christmas or something like that, because it's just so amazing. It's like such a cool experience. So that was so fun.
I was just gonna say, is this a course that you have to go through?
Yeah, so in rowing, yeah, there are like straight races, and then there are races that are, so the straight races are usually 2,000 meters. I was about to say 2,000 kilometers, and I was like, that is so not right. Or they're longer, like 4 to 6 kilometers, and those are head races, and those have like, they tend to have a lot of twists and turns, and it, like, navigating that course well is really important, just in the sense that if you take a corner too tight or too wide, that may like add an extra 100 meters to your race, and that will like result in your time being slower. So for races like Head of the Charles, it's really important to have a very strong course.
But how many times do you get to like practice the course? Once.
Oh, I don't know. Twice, 2-3 times.
Ebba, how many times do you
throw it?
Yeah, it really depends on how many times you get out. She's also, we're not in Boston that often. It was my first time in Boston, so I had never rode it before. We were just out training one time the day before, and then we raced this next day. But yeah, it's a river, so it's not like you're making turns on a lake. It's like you're rowing around buoys or something. It's like a river that you rope down. So it has like, it turns. But yeah, still super fun race.
But you were going to say something before I dropped in.
Yeah, no, so the question was like, what boat type I rode, and I rode the single today, and that's what I'm going for competing with. But I really love the crew boats. It's actually what I wish I was doing. My category and my disability allows me only to row this category. So it's the PR1. In the power rowing, you have PR1, PR2, and PR3, depending on your ability. But I've actually also, after my injury, I've been coxing as Nicole. So I coxed the junior men's 8, actually, in the junior national rowing team, and we won the Nordic Championships gold. So that was also just such a fun experience to have my injury being a para, but I was able to compete and still be with the national team in the able-bodied side, which is also a cool experience. And I'm still coxing the my club here in Falkenberg's 8, so the men's 8 in Falkenberg, which is also such a fun thing to still be a part of.
I'm unfamiliar with this term, but I'm guessing that it means to, like, you said it's like yelling.
Yeah, so coxing is a really unique position, in the sense that, like, you're not just like, the easiest way to explain it is like, oh, I sit there and I yell and I steer, and that's all I tell people, because I don't really want to get into it. But there's a lot of understanding current, wind patterns, course, having a good understanding of what boats are around you, and driving in a straight line. And that's just like spatial awareness and where you're driving the boat. And then there's aspects to it, like, you run the workout, so you call things, like if they're doing intervals, you call the intervals, or you call the power tens. And that's just running the workout. And then you add this whole other element of racing, and it's making sure you're keeping the boat in time with the things you say and how you say it, and building this relationship and trust with the boat or the people that you're with. And in terms of racing, like, you've got to know what pushes the crew's buttons and what's going to force them to dig deep. So it's a role that requires a lot of personality and assertiveness.
It sounds like the soprano player. Like, it sounds, yeah, like that's the soprano.
You've gotta have a lot of attitude.
Nice.
I don't know if it's like that in Sweden, Ebba, but what I rode, at least, coxies were willing to like literally fist fight for the best line on the water, which is maybe not the best culture, but.
no, but it's super fun, and it's also like, as a coxie, you could really like destroy everything for the boat, so they should have respect for you because you're in charge.
You're the first one to get blamed if something goes wrong. That's all I'm gonna say. Yeah. I'm so glad to hear that you've been able to cox. I also feel like coxing for me, I now coach. I no longer am part of the sport as an athlete, but I now coach. Coxing definitely gave me a lot of really valuable insight, because you're that weird position between being an athlete and kind of being a coach. So you're kind of like the middleman, and it's been very interesting to have both perspectives to some extent and kind of find your position.
After a race, is it coxing?
Mm-hmm.
So after a race, like, because you sort of get that like post performance high, right? If you're rowing solo versus rowing with a group, like, what's the difference? Like, if you're done, because one of the questions I was going to ask was, I feel like I'm always super critical of myself after a solo performance. Like, I always get off the stage and I'm like, I could have done it. Like, even if it's a really good performance, I'm always like, it could have been better. I made this mistake. And I don't really celebrate as much. Whereas if I'm coming off stage after playing with a group, we'll be like, good job, everybody. Like, that went really well. Especially if I'm the soprano player, I'm always have to make sure, like, everybody, like, that went really well. Like, don't even worry about it. So sometimes I feel like it's almost a more positive experience after a performance if I'm with a group rather than as a soloist.
I don't think I've ever seen someone who does a solo sport, like single rowing, running cross country, running track, swimming, cycling, ever finish a race solo and be like, yeah, I'm proud of that performance.
Yeah.
There's always something to criticize. Doesn't matter if they like came first by 2 minutes or something. They're like, oh, like, I don't know, like the way I breathed in those last three strokes was just not right. I could have shaved off an extra 0.3 of a second there.
Yeah. And then I was going to ask, like, do you guys think we're too critical of ourselves? Like, as performance athletes, I feel like sometimes, or is it a good thing to be that critical? Like,
I feel like all high performance athletes, they're just striving for that perfection, and that's what pushes you. And I think most high performance athletes in all aspects of their life are very critical of themselves.
Yeah, I know. It's a big theme in like the sports psych is like athletes being high in self-criticism, high in perfectionism, so kind of anxiety type traits. A lot of the literature, or at least, you know, what I remember it from the class I took, is actually about self-compassion and how being kind to yourself, remembering that common humanity, like, you're not alone. Everyone, you know, experiences struggle. Those sorts of things actually, not only is it like common sense, like you're being nicer to yourself, but it actually improves your performance. Eva, have you taken any sports psych courses? Or I don't know, because I come from a different university. So what have you learned for self-compassion versus perfectionism and that sort of thing?
No, yeah, I also took a sports psychology course. I think it was only my first year though, so it was very early and everything. So it's not very fresh in my memory, but I remember that I recognized myself in so many parts of the course, and you could put so much into what yourself were always doing. And that was very interesting also to just like understand that, hey, I'm thinking this way, or like, why am I doing this? And why am I striving for that? Why does the mind work that way? But yeah, of course, I think it both can, like, striving for this perfection is something that can push you to like always want to improve, of course, as every athlete want to do. But I think it's something that can both like help or hinder your performance. It helps you develop in a way that like to always push and become better always. But it's also like that being too like critique on yourself can also like sometimes not allow you to, maybe because you need to sometimes just let go also to just like allow to take the next step, because otherwise you keep just being nagging in the same thing all over again. So yeah, I think it can really be both positive and negative aspects of it.
Yeah, I seem to remember, let's see how much of the course comes back to my mind. I seem to remember like after a race, after or performance, like reflecting, going, okay, I could have improved these things. that's totally cool, that's legit, and that's how you learn, like, you need to self-reflect. But if it becomes, you're rolling them over and over and over in your mind, you're ruminating on them, you are only focusing on the negatives, you're not acknowledging the positives, at that point, you should probably go see your sports psychologist and see if you can develop some, healthier coping mechanisms or remember to celebrate yourself, even as you continue to strive to get better, always stronger, faster, higher, faster, stronger.
Yeah.
Someone help me. I don't remember.
I recently was able to interview a Paralympic swimmer and is now a hopeful Paralympic cyclist. I told him to just complete the trifecta and do running, and he was like, absolutely not. But he talked a lot about being young and having this mentality of go, 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 push as hard as you can, was to the point where he was leaving practices in ambulances, throwing up on the side of the dock, side of the pool. And it's been, I think, 6 years since he retired from elite swimming, pro swimming. And he was like, yeah, when I was younger, I lacked that self-compassion. Swimming put me in a headspace where it just was ruining me. And now I've been presented with this opportunity to go back to elite sport. And I've had this conversation with myself. If I'm going to go back to elite sport, I have to do it right. I have to do it because I want to do it and because it's pushing me to be a better person and not because I feel like I have something to prove to myself and other people. Ebba, do you ever feel like you've had those kind of moments of clarity where you're like, I need to work smarter, not harder?
Oh, yes. And I really know myself, what you're talking about, that go, go, go situation. And I think that's also been something that has helped me, but also like kind of stopped me to deal with things that I maybe should and need to deal with. I can recognize myself in like during the time I actually got my injury, where I think I mostly saw the injury as like a challenge. And from my athlete mindset, I saw more